We're about to go to Chocolate City.
Let's get it!
The capital of the United States.
Woo! You know, haters are haters, you know. They control the mouth.
Merry Christmas, little man!
Commitment to fucking playing defense.
I'm not eating cat food either.
What's this all about? We're on the kiss cam. I feel a little reluctant to take that.
How sweet.
That pick was really strong.
Look out, Nene and Butler, butting heads, looking at each other.
Broadcasting from the capital of the free world, this is Zardcast.
Would you trade a first round pick for Marcus Morris?
No.
I mean, I think that's a little.
No way.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm saying I wouldn't want him unless, like, you could get rid of Trey Burke and Marcus Thornton because they're both on expirings and all the Pistons care about is having free space and getting rid of Marcus Morris. I don't know.
Yeah,
that scenario.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I was actually thinking the whole time I was watching the game, and I started recording. Thanks for listening to All Money Ballin' NBA show. Is this going up on Zardcast, or is this just All Money Ballin'?
No, we can put it on the Zardcast feed for sure.
I can do your.
You are now listening to Zardcast.
Great impression,
right? Welcome to Chocolate City. What else happens?
Merry Christmas, little man.
Commitment to playing effing defense.
I could do the whole thing, but I won't. Should just listen to Zardcast.
And I'll just do the dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. All right, that's good enough. My guest today, or his guest today, is CT Schwenk. Thanks for coming on and talking Wizards, man.
Of course, of course. There's no better time to talk about the Wizards than at this very moment, even though it's after a loss. This is exciting times here in DC.
So this is more something for CT to know, but the listeners can know this on an intimate level now because we're having a conversation, and this is the type of access that you get when you listen to the show. But I was making a pitch to one of the A-Team shows, and the Wizards are or the Zardcast are our Wizards A-Team podcast. And the show, or the guy who runs the show that I was making the pitch to, was like, what would you recommend if I was, you know, trying to listen to the best podcast that you've had recently? And I sent them that Andrew Sharp one. And then
very nice. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. So I sent that one and the Heat Beat 100th episode and the one, Warriors Huddle one that had Draymond's mom and just some stuff like that. Or actually, I sent the Warriors Huddle one with me on it. But I think
you're
very
so
highly. What?
You're so vain. I'm just joking.
But I think very highly of Zardcast. So, we're happy to have you on the network. But you know that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We've been on board since not quite day one, but once you started the whole team by team network, we were on board pretty quickly. And
I think you were there for day one.
Were we in the first round
out,
of them?
Yeah, I sent out seven. Like, hey, would you be interested in doing this? And it was you guys, Lakers Legacy, Undebeatables, Warriors Huddle, a few others. But you were in the A team of the A team.
That's good to hear. Yeah,
you look a little bit like Mr. T, so it works.
Thanks. And my friends call me T, so that works too. I feel like it's tough to find. I mean, I don't want to give myself too much credit or the other guys on the A team, but like to find podcasts that do it every week for no matter what, just because we're insane people, it was good on you to dig us all up and then like, hey, like just keep doing that and I'll supply you with pretty artwork. So that's a good deal to me.
Yeah. So if you're listening to All Money Ball and NBA show, then go subscribe to Zardcast if you want to hear more of CT. And I'll answer that question. You do want to hear more of CT and the other guys over at this is where I would have that Gary drop. Maybe I'll
Gary.
Add it in post. If you want to listen to CT, Gary, and his and the third co-host, Dave, then you should go subscribe to Zardcast. If you're listening to this on Zardcast, though, you should go subscribe to All Mighty Ball and NBA show. And if you're an NBA fan, you should watch the Washington Wizards right now because it is great basketball. That game tonight was good.
Yeah, to say the least. I mean, it was good. I mean, it was worth all the hype that we'd been getting all weekend. The phone booth was rocking, probably the loudest it's been in, you know, 3 years, perhaps.
The announcer said that if they won that game, it would have been the longest streak in the last 13 years. So, yeah. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, the last streak was the Gilbert Arenas era. It's been a while. The win streak that came to a close tonight at 17 straight, that was the second longest in franchise history, and that hadn't been done since back in the 70s when they were the Bullets.
Were they the Bullets?
And yeah. Winning championships or a championship. But, yeah. Being amongst the league's premier.
Yeah, that's the thing. If you haven't been watching the NBA lately, the Washington Wizards are a really, really good team. I feel like I deserve a little bit of a pat on the back because if you remember us podcasting, I'm pretty sure I went on Zardcast. Actually, I don't deserve a pat on the back because I said this is definitely a playoff team if Bradley Beal and John Wall are out on the court. But I said that I didn't expect that to happen. So
it's okay. That's what a lot of people felt that way. It's not. Yeah. It wasn't an unpopular opinion or out of line.
But I feel like people just. I feel like, you know, the Wizards have suffered so many injuries over the last few years that it's. I understand why people think a little bit lower of them, and specifically thought at the start of the season when you had that slow start, like that it was the apocalypse, because it's hard to remember the Wizards machine working as well as it is right now, though it has.
Yeah, we've seen it in the last couple of years. I mean, when you start 2-8 and you're the Washington Wizards, like, it just, you know, it's another drop in the bucket. It's how it has always been, and it wasn't surprising. So when that happens, everyone's like, oh, well, it's just another season for the Wizards. And what we kind of, I think that was probably a little too doom and gloom in hindsight. I mean, obviously, but to just chalk it up to, you know, regular wisdom is not correct, because last year they were 500 and they were without Bradley Beal for a lot of the year. And now you're seeing the difference of Bradley Beal playing at a high level plus John Wall. I mean, he's having a career year this year, but last year was the second best year of his career. He's only continued to get better. And actually, after last season, we speculated, we were like, John Wall can play like this. He did this for the season forever, and that would be great. But is it possible that he could get even better? And he has. So, you know, the machine is working, and, you know, we've seen it before too. I mean, they swept the Raptors in the playoffs 2 years ago. They were a broken hand away from the Eastern Conference Finals. And then the year before that, you know, they beat the Bulls being a 5 seed and, you know, fought a tough one out with the Pacers in the second round. So it's, you know, it's not unfathomable that this has happened, but it's very, very exciting just in the way that they've done it. And, you know, tonight was the culmination of that despite the loss. And I think everyone should know that the Wizards are a good team, and John Wall is the second best player in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah. So I want to bring up some of the concerns that I have with the Wizards, but I want to do it in the context of we're getting further. These concerns, these pressing playoff viability concerns are like pretty low on the list of total concerns. So it's like I'm bringing up negatives, but it's sort of a positive that, you know, when you're listing the negatives, these are not huge. So, I mean, one thing is I think that it's scary to think that, you know, whether or not your starting rotation is going to work out depends on whether or not Markieff Morris is doing what he does well. Would you agree? I would actually start out with that as number one, because like during the regular season, I get that the bench is not crippling, but if the starting lineup isn't playing really, really well, then it, you know, can be crippling. But I mean, when you shorten your rotation, I think Satoransky is really smart. I bet he gets playoff minutes. I think either Jason Smith or Jan Mahimi will work out. You know, I'm okay with, Oubre. But yeah, it's just like that question mark there, you know, that Markieff Morris, how good is he, is a little concerning to me.
Well, I think we're starting to see it. It came out recently within the last week or so that, apparently Bleacher Report, you know, they ranked their top 30 power forwards and he wasn't on the list, and Kelly Oubre brought this to his attention. And he was so like, that is what he says is has been his inspiration for how well he's been playing lately. The fact that someone didn't even consider him. I mean, there were, you know, bench guys listed ahead of him. And he's, you know, he's really kind of brought it and woken it up. And this is kind of what we predicted when he showed up last year. You know, it took him a while to settle in, but towards the end of the season, he was pretty good. And we figured, hey, you know, he figures out the offense. He has a whole off season with these guys, and they bring in another coach who, you know, is a good coach. Maybe he can be successful and, you know, move along. And that's what he's done. And I don't really see any reason for him to stop playing well. And additionally, while he's played well with the starters and made this starting five one of the best in the entire NBA, he plays a lot with the second unit. When the starters are kind of rotated out, he's always the last starter on the floor, and he's kind of their source of offense and rebounding and toughness. And, you know, he at least brings two of those three pretty consistently. And that's, you know, with the bench, it's all about kind of hanging on to the lead, and he really helps them do that. So I don't really see him as a huge concern at the moment. And you're right, thinking about him as a concern is kind of a positive in a sense, because if that's what you're worried about, then it's not too big of a deal, I suppose.
So, you know, nothing of what you said I disagree with, right? I think, you know, I think thinking about the Wizards as a machine is interesting because, A, Marcin Gortat is nicknamed the machine, right?
Yes, not the hammer.
It's like the Marcin machine.
Yes. Right?
And I think it's also interesting because, like, you know, you start to think about, like, you know, throwing wrenches in it, and you know, that it has to be, like, upkept, right? And I think one of the, maybe the printer part of, like, the whole process, because printers as machines are just totally unreliable, right?
They're
always out of ink. They always have some issue, you know, is Markieff Morris, because I feel like most people, when they hear stuff like, and I mean, okay, so you know how Damian Lillard is catching on fire now because he's upset that he got snubbed for the All-Star game again.
Yeah.
Why weren't you motivated before that? You know, like, why couldn't you just be as good as you are now before that? Because then maybe your team would be in the playoff hunt. You know what I mean? Like, people hear that and they're like, hell yeah, you got to draw motivation externally. And I'm like, no, you just have to, like, go out there and be good no matter what. Tony Allen is going to bite your ear off. No matter what, right? And so, like, if Markieff Morris, I mean, if his girlfriend breaks up with him during the playoffs, like, is he gonna, like, fall apart? I mean, I don't know.
Well, I think, I totally get what you're saying, and I think it's way more applicable to Damian Lillard as a guy who, you know, his team is relying on him to win games and lead them. With Markieff Morris, you know, it's not like he was, you know, he was certainly not as reliable as you'd like him to be before, but, you know, maybe he's just kind of discovered a focus that he didn't really know that he had, maybe an extra gear. I mean, he's a veteran for sure, but he's not that old. I think this is, you know, the stretch of basketball he's played, it's probably gone a long way to increasing that confidence and, you know, keeping him focused. So I get it. He could be unreliable, but I like, you know what, I think this really speaks more to Scott Brooks in getting all these guys on the same page and all of them focused. So I'll give, you know, the credit to Scott Brooks. And I, at this point, have faith in, you know, having him keep Markieff focused and the whole team focused, really.
Yeah, you know, I think that Scott Brooks isn't all that much better than Randy Whitman. So here's my thought process, right?
Oh, you're so wrong.
No. Okay, just hold up. In terms of X's and O's, right? I think that, like, it was good to replace. I think as a principle, it's good to replace guys like Byron Scott with guys like Luke Walton, right? Because, like, just, like, the emotional upswing of that is like, your team is going to improve just because it's a bad situation. It's like, you know, what is it when you're getting a rocket ship and you use a planet to slingshot?
Yeah,
it's like slingshotting. Like, if you go really far where, like, you have an emotionally stunted, like, George Karl coach, getting a positive guy like slingshots you in the other direction, and it's a good idea. But in terms of X's and O's, I for the most part liked what Randy Whitman did while he was in Washington, because like he slowed it down and grinded it out, and when he was always dealing with weird injuries and stuff, there was less variance, because it's like, I mean, we see a team like the Warriors who do play fast and do shoot a lot of threes, who are super talented, they're okay with, like, you know, the fact that every once in a while, like every once in a blue moon, they'll get beat by the Lakers or the Kings, right? But if the Wizards aren't going to have the possibility to blow teams off the court, which I think was a thing when John Wall was the only good player, then he was just wanted to slow it down and just like go tooth and nail with guys. And I think that, you know, it, like you said, it got you to the Eastern Conference Finals twice. Do you get what I mean so far?
Yeah, but at the same time, Randy,
I think the team's fundamentally different now. I think that the difference is, so the credit I'm going to give, I think this is Otto Porter. That's the difference.
Well, yeah, he's certainly the difference, but under Randy Whitman, I mean, he didn't play Otto Porter for like a really long time, and it was hugely detrimental to the team. I mean, you can look at, I mean, as soon as Otto stepped on the floor and he like started playing, you know, well enough consistently, we were like, what has this guy been doing? Like, why has he just been buried on the bench all season? Kelly Oubre, you know, he was a rookie last year. I don't know how much more impactful he could have been, but he certainly could have used some more time. And, you know, the Wizards were 500 and flailing and fighting for an eight seed. Like, what does it matter if, you know, your rookie plays, you know, a couple more minutes rather than just burying him on the bench? And I mean, as far as the X's and O's go, Randy Whitman loved his guys shooting long twos, the most inefficient shot in the game. And God, it was awful. And Matt, it was awful.
But they
were
creating offense in the half court because it was slow. And they also didn't have Otto Porter, who is shooting what? Like, I keep hearing that he's the third best or the best 3-point shooter in the league right now or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, but they also, I mean, they also had Paul Pierce, they had Trevor Ariza, like they've had guys that can shoot threes. They had a good year of Marshall Webster.
But they were playing Nene and Gortat.
That didn't really, I mean, that ended up not really working out. It worked out sometimes, but not as much as, I mean, Randy committed to, he overly committed to it, and it was detrimental a lot of times. And I think his coaching style was also bad for Brad Beal. I mean, all of Brad's shots, I mean, he attacks the basket so much more often, and he shoots way more threes than he did under Randy. He almost, I mean, not almost never, but like hardly shoots long twos, which, I mean, are fine, and he could certainly make them, but I'd rather him just back up a foot or two and just shoot a three. So that was maddening, and I think that, I mean, that is like a definite X and O change between Randy Whitman and Scott Brooks. And I mean, just in, you know, Randy Whitman didn't want to play Otto and he didn't want to play Kelly Oubre. Scott Brooks does, and he's made both of them better for it. So I mean, that in itself, I mean, I said before, I think he made Markieff Morris better and, you know, found a way for him to get locked in, and, you know, when a lot of coaches couldn't. So I, you know, I think there's a lot of differences and a lot of positive differences. I mean, I don't like Randy, but it's hard to look back at him too fondly. So I disagree.
I don't really believe that. I just felt like it was a good hot take thing to say.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just fine.
It generated good discussion, right? Like that was a positive back and forth, I think. But you know, regardless of whether you want to say that the improvement has been internal for every player, I guess is what I mean. So whether Bradley Beal is better at driving or whether he's being asked to drive more is a question. And whether Otto Porter is just some, I mean, I think Otto Porter has genuinely become a better 3-point shooter, you know, and that is, but on the flip side, you know, that's more useful in the type of offense they're playing, right? You know,
yeah. I mean, the plan has always been for Otto to hopefully, you know, be consistent shooting the three ball. And I think even, you know, something that would never change between any coach that coaches John Wall is that there are always going to be open threes to be had. So him just, yeah, you're right. Figuring out how to hit them, I think that's probably on him for just, you know, working at it. So,
yeah.
it wasn't going to change. And you're right. I mean, he's been the revelation this year. I mean, we expected Brad to be good, but they've needed the guy that could really open up the floor and hit those threes.
So I like this contrarian thing that I was doing, and since I didn't have an outline going into this episode, that's going to be our new outline. I'm going to say things that, regardless of whether or not I agree with them, you know, I'm going to pursue them. So here's what I'm going to say. Isaiah Thomas, man, he's averaging like 31, 32 points in the MVP discussion. His fourth quarter scoring has been ridiculous. Isaiah Thomas is better than John Wall.
I will put him with Kyrie Irving and say, if you can't play, you know, well at both ends of the floor, sorry. Bradley Beal ate Isaiah Thomas for lunch when they played 2 weeks ago. Like, he had to be removed from the floor. Don't you think that's going to become a problem come playoff time?
Oh my God, yes.
I mean, like, that's a disaster. And Celtics fans can cry about how Avery Bradley hasn't been playing, but
Isaiah Thomas has never won a playoff series if he's your starting point guard.
Right. And, you know, good luck. I'm sure he'll play fine, but, you know, No.
Because, like, the reason why I think the Washington Wizards are so dangerous is because if you're an elite team, you probably have two elite guards. And if you have two elite guards who, like Bradley Beal and John Wall, are both 6'5" and move just as fast or faster than Isaiah Thomas, like, how are you going to exploit anything? Like, Isaiah Thomas is just going to get, like, kicked in the teeth every possession offensively. You can't just say, oh, I'll put Isaiah Thomas on the weaker of the two guards. So, like, what? He's on Bradley Beal.
I mean, I think the Celtics are good, but I think they're going to have problems with any team that they face in the East. I mean, if they have to play Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler, I think that's highly problematic for them. Really? The Raptors, for sure. I mean, maybe just in terms of that matchup, I'm sure the Celtics could beat the Bulls, but... if you look at any matchup, that's a huge part of it. And it has to be really concerning. And, you know, Kyrie Irving, his teammates can cover for him on defense, but, he's not great. Isaiah Thomas, I don't think he has, the luxury of LeBron James or Kevin Love or Amon Shumpert. You know, it's not the case. Sorry.
Yeah.
John Wall's good when he's locked in. Also,
and you know, offensively, if you do points created, so if you count assists, whether that's like a two or three assist that leads to points and points, John Wall is better offensively than Isaiah Thomas anyways. So
totally. And it's kind of a joke amongst Wizards fans, but if they counted hockey assists like John Wall and LeBron, I mean, they'd be runaway leaders in the assist category. Like, He can initiate the offense so well. And one of the great things about this Wizards team as of late is they pass really well and quite crisply. And, you know, he gets the ball swinging and everyone starts swinging. And, you know, the person who scores can be the fourth recipient of that that chain that he created.
Yeah. That is, I think what it is there's not a lot of defenders who can deal with John Wall one-on-one. And so the less guys who you can confidently say, okay, I can put this guy on him and he's going to be essentially neutered, right? So Kawhi Leonard is a little bit like that. You can put Kawhi Leonard on most guys and just say the superstar effect that he will force a double team. And if you can force a double team and like force switches and then move the ball, someone will be open at some point, probably on the weak side for a corner three or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
John Wall is really, really high on the list, like Kyrie Irving, right? Where it's just like, if you just say, okay, Dennis Schroeder, make sure John Wall doesn't score and we're not going to overhelp. Like, Marcin Gortat is just going to slam all the time, right? Because whoever's covering Marcin just is going to be like, oh, shit, oh crap, like Dennis Schroeder can't deal with this guy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we saw it repeatedly tonight against the Cavs. I mean, they showed it at halftime. I mean, the defense that either collapses all around him and he just has eyes all around his head. Or, you know, he's able to take guys down one-on-one when his jump shot's falling. I mean, it's really awesome. But I mean, he can, you turn your head for 2 seconds and he's gone. He's right by you. So it's kind of pick your poison. And fortunately, I mean, where teams have been doing the most damage is when he's not been on the floor. And, you know, if his shot's not falling or his teammates' shots aren't falling. But I guess that goes for everyone.
So, you know, John Wall, I think, certainly was at some point in his career, you could probably classify him as an elite defender. I think at this point, you might say that he's an above average defender. I mean, Kyrie Irving during that overtime was smoking John Wall. And yeah, that's too bad, because like, if that hadn't happened, you would have won the game. And that sort of, you know, it said about games like tonight, you know, the TNT game and everything, that it's a playoff atmosphere, right? The way that you win that playoff game is that John Wall effectively deals with Kyrie Irving. And the fact that he didn't tonight, I think, is actually probably the biggest like red flag for me, because otherwise it looked like, I mean, they did go toe to toe the entire game and they were hitting huge shots, and it's like, yeah, the Cavs were hitting huge shots, but that's what the Cavs are going to do. You just also have to hit those huge shots, Steph. So you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. I think, I mean, it's definitely unfortunate how it unfolded, because John Wall dominated him for 4 quarters and Kyrie Irving was able to get it going for 5 minutes. And you know, they weren't in that position. They were in that position really no thanks to him. And if LeBron doesn't hit a crazy shot, I mean, that's what he does, like you said. But you know, and you got Brad Beal on the team too. I mean, he was hitting good shot, big shots. You're right, he's an above average defender. It really hurts me to say that he's not elite at it, but you know, it's tough. I mean, Kyrie's great too, and you know, just kind of how it shook out. I mean, Kyrie was due. I mean, he missed so many 3-pointers, and I watched it with my co-host Dave. I was like, dude, these are gonna start going in eventually. And you know, it just happened after regulation was over, unfortunately.
Yeah, as it tends to with Kyrie Irving.
Yeah.
So why, going back to the relative standing of the Washington Wizards right now, why the huge jump? Has it been mostly just like coaching and improvement? Like, do you agree that I think the person who's taken the biggest jump this year is Otto Porter? Like, he's if Ernie, would it be the biggest mistake of Ernie's career to not match on a max offer for Otto?
I just don't think they really, I mean, they're just kind of in the same spot they were with Brad Beal last summer. They just don't, I mean, the way the NBA is, that you got to lock your guy up, and you know, you just got to roll the dice on it. I think they don't have a choice. He's proven himself worthy. I mean, this is basically his third year of playing. And you know, he's steadily gone trending upward. So yeah, I wouldn't say it's the worst decision of his tenure with the Wizards, but it would be.
I'm saying, like, if the Nets offered Otto a max and Ernie said no thanks.
No, I don't think it would be the worst thing he's ever done, but I mean, it would certainly be like top five. The problem is, I think you could find a number of Wizards fans who would probably argue against re-signing him just because it's going to destroy the cap, and you know, they're already locked into a couple bad contracts as it is. So they don't really have a whole lot of flexibility in trying to round out their team and really patch up the bench, which has been their biggest problem. I mean, maybe Ernie's not his worst decision, but I think the fact that he couldn't put together a competent bench this summer, and who knows, maybe Jan Mahimny comes back and it's solid, but like, the fact that this starting five is so great, if they just had like a, you know, a decent bench, this team, you know, they really would have serious Eastern Conference. I mean, not to say that their aspirations aren't serious now for the Eastern Conference Finals, but like, you could see a scenario where they, you know, take the Cavs in 7 games, maybe win. Who knows?
I mean, like, watching craziness. This game tonight, you could see a scenario where, I mean, they can get there. You know, I think LeBron in that last few minutes, you know, where he was responsible either through passing or through shooting. He hit those three threes in a row, and his shot looked so true. Like, it's like he was just taking them, and you knew that they were going to go in every time. I think that LeBron can do that for an entire game. Maybe not when he's exhausted and being played 100 minutes a game and it's the regular season, but that's how they would beat you, is right. LeBron does that for the whole game. But we don't know if LeBron's... I mean, that last finals might have been like the last season that LeBron can legitimately kick it into gear whenever he wants. Because, I mean... Yeah, I mean, the fact that the Wizards were legitimately contending with them tonight, even after LeBron kicked it into gear, I feel like there's like a legit possibility that it ends up at six games. LeBron looks up and is like, oh, crap. And then if you get hot for two games, you win.
Right. I'm going to look up the... I don't quite remember what the final score was. The reason...
I think it was 140 to 137.
137, sure. Okay. So whatever the Wizards' total was, the bench only scored 16 of those points, and most of them were from Kelly Oubre.
Wow.
So I think if the Wizards had like an actually good bench, then it would take LeBron going nuts for seven games. The fact that they don't doesn't I don't think that you need an effort from LeBron like that. So while they can, they could probably get to the Eastern Conference Finals, they'd probably lose in five games. I just feel like the Wizards would be due to run out of steam, and you don't need LeBron going Iron Man on everyone and just flaming threes and it's the bench, man. I think that if they had a squad or someone that could increase the lead a little bit, they did it a little bit tonight, but that was about it. I just don't think they're quite all the way there, and LeBron is still LeBron, even though he might be a smidge worse than last year. Who really knows at this point in the season? But I don't think that
it's probably right to assume that he is as good as he was. But as long as that's the case, I think you're right. The Wizards are locked out because, this game really came down to like a lot of freaky stuff happening.
Right.
I mean, LeBron hit that three, but he also should have hit that layup before.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kyrie like hit a bunch of crazy shots, but of course that is almost the expectation at this point. But like, this game was so close that you could taste it, and I think that's meaningful. But absolutely. If LeBron can do what he did in the fourth every quarter, then it's gonna be an Eastern Conference Finals that looks a little bit like the Eastern Conference Finals last year, where he relaxes a little bit for the first couple of games, and then when it starts to look like it might be a close series, he just does his thing. And I guess like Andre Iguodala is the difference between the Wizards and the Warriors. I mean, if you guys had Iguodala coming off the bench, if you guys had someone like that, that would be huge, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's crazy to think about too, because like when the Warriors won, whatever like the final game was, LeBron, Iguodala got the MVP for the series, but LeBron scored 35 points on him. It's still, he's still going to do LeBron things. It's just disheartening, which is why, amongst what everyone's talking about, trade deadline, are the Wizards going to make a move? What do they actually need? I think people are pretty split between, a backup guard of some sort or a wing. But a lot of people are like, go with the backup guard, go with someone who can spell John Wall, it can score points, because you're not going to find a wing on the market that can guard LeBron James. So, why bother? Why not try and score on their second unit and try and upgrade over that, because their second unit isn't that great. It's not that athletic. Wasn't super impressed. I'm actually kind of impressed how they kind of stagger their starters and whatnot, especially with Kyle Korver in the mix now. But I think I'm in the camp of getting a backup point guard is the key to trying to compete against the Cavs in the playoffs.
Okay, well, it is right before the trade deadline, and I'm frankly proud of ourselves that it's 35, 30-ish minutes into the podcast, and we haven't really talked about trade scenarios yet. just so the listener knows, that's why we've been talking about trades for the last, like, 15 podcasts. Oh, on my show. I don't know. I know on Zardcast you've talked about a bunch of different stuff. Go listen to Zardcast. But on my show, I've talked about trades a lot recently because of the trade deadline, and then after that, that's going to stop. But, CT. So looking at backup
3 weeks.
yeah, it's going to be... Oh, goodness. Okay, so are you happy with Jason Center or Jason Smith at center? I might be, honestly.
Yeah, he's fine. Actually, he's probably... Oh, man, he's probably like the seventh best player in the team right now, like behind Oubre. So, yeah, he's fine. And honestly... So when,
and Oubre's fine, too.
Yeah, he's fine. Oubre's fine. Trey Burke is, like, not okay.
Back up.
Satoransky's not going anywhere.
Really? Talk about Satoransky, because I sort of like him. I think in the right lineup, he could be really good.
He's interesting. He's played... So the Wizards drafted him a couple of years ago in the second round, and he was basically like, no, I'm not playing for the Washington Wizards. I'm going to hang out in Barcelona instead, which I don't really blame him for, but... he's played there. He might have played elsewhere in Europe. He's from the Czech Republic. He's about 25 now. His rookie season. He finally agreed to come over, and it looks like he's got some moves. Like he's got some good vision. He can pass the ball well. He can't really shoot it all that great. When he does drive the ball, it looks decent. So he's definitely like a piece that they're gonna hang on to, hopefully, for a couple seasons, and try and make him the true backup point guard. But for now, they definitely need something, because before he actually fell out of the rotation for a while, and we were getting so much Marcus Thornton, and it really, really hurt to watch him play.
Oh my god,
it was awful.
He's so bad.
So he hasn't played since like January 3rd or something, so that's good. But yeah, I think, I mean, out of those guys, they need someone better than that. Trey Burke is erratic and not a point guard, and Satoransky is still learning. But say they do get a backup guard, then you got to...
So we were talking before we started recording, do you want to trade your first round pick for a backup guard?
Because
this next draft is supposed to be really good. And I know in the top 10, it's guard heavy. I don't know about past then.
Yeah. So that's the thing. I mean, the Wizards, first of all, I mean, they don't really... Ernie Grunfeld doesn't draft all that well. I mean,
Otto Porter's really good. Bradley Beal's really good. John Wall was the obvious first pick. So.
Right. I think with Brad and with Otto, you could have definitely botched that pick. They might have... I don't remember what the draft classes look like. Possibly could have improved on him. He hit on those two. Those are both top five picks, so good job on him. But for as far as everything else goes, and the Wizards certainly will have no top five pick this year, hasn't really been proven to be too reliable. I guess Kelly Ray's coming along. So as of late, maybe he's hit on some things.
I think he's okay. I think he's a better than advertised drafter.
Yeah, probably at this point later, within the last 5 years or so. But he really has the fact that he, missed for so many years has been a huge detriment to this team, the whole franchise. I mean, if, they don't draft Jan Vesely and they get,
Oh, my God. Clay Thompson. Okay, Jan Vesely, that's the real reason for the reputation, right?
Yeah, as far as recent history goes, I don't remember... I'm trying to go all the way back. I don't remember who was in like the 08 and 07 draft. I mean,
I'm going to pull that up, but keep talking.
But all that being said, I mean, if the Wiz can get help now, if they can drastically improve their bench with a first rounder, I mean, one of the arguments is, you can't keep promising John Wall that, like, hey, we're going to get another rookie and like he's going to pan out in like 3 years. John Wall is going to could very well be gone in 3 years. So because of that, and because he wanted to stick around, and because this team is good, and if they had one more piece and Jan Mahimny comes back healthy and can play tonight, he would have been huge. They really could use someone who plays well defensively in the post and can rebound. I don't think it's insane. And if it happens, I don't know how, if I'll even be upset about it. Especially, I mean, if it's an auto upgrade, I mean, I don't really, it'll be a weird thing for Wizards fans because all we do is complain about how Ernie just loves giving away draft picks. But if he actually got, you know, an instant upgrade, someone that can really, you know, up their chances against the Cavaliers and the rest of the East, then we might find ourselves in a weird predicament where we like a trade like that.
Yeah, I could definitely see that happening. And it's not like the Wizards, and this is something I'm glad we're touching on. All of the Wizards' best players are, and I mean like their best players, are actually really, really young. And that's something that has been discussed a lot, especially when they were getting to the Eastern Conference Finals. It's like, John Wall's only 22. He's only 23. Bradley Beal's only, you know, it was a frequent topic of discussion. And you would think that now with Bradley Beal being, again, only 23 and John Wall being only 26 and Otto Porter coming out. And I think that he's very good at the skill set that you'd want from a number three, you know, like,
right.
He's basically like the, you know, stretch four equivalent of Ray Allen, right? He like gets open for catch and shoot shots really well and then plays good defense. He's not as good as Ray Allen, but I mean the skill set, right? I think those guys are your best players, and that means your core is like 23, 23, and 26. So they're really young, and if they traded a draft pick, it's not like they would be like down the line when I mean, like the Wizards are quite possibly going to, you know, have like another renaissance at some point, like 5 years down the line, just because of the way that everyone's age is, you know. I'm saying you can trade a draft pick and you're not going to screw yourself.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, especially, you know, you are totally locked into Beal. You're probably going to lock yourself into Otto Porter here. You know, you want to, I mean, John Wall is the best Washington Wizard, in 20 years, 25 years. So, of course, you want him around. Gortat, I think he's still got 2 years on his deal. You know, he's going to be a little bit older, but, you know, to have the, you know, your starting center position all sewn up. Markieff Morris, I don't know how much longer is on his deal, but, I mean, I think it's because of where the team is at. I don't think it's crazy to, you know, try and add some depth, some veteran depth. I mean, these guys are only going to get better. I mean, this is Bradley Beal's first good season, like, consistently so far. I mean, he's played well before, and he did play well in both times that they went to the playoffs. But, you know, we haven't seen a full season of him playing well every night. And, you know, he's still not leading the team in scoring either. So, that is like kind of the inevitable thing that we're all hoping to happen at some point, and it hasn't happened yet. So, you know, I think, yeah, when you look at it like that, and, you know, it's weird. We talk about how young they are and having the young core, but I think that needs to be taken into consideration, the fact that these guys are young. You've got them locked up. They're going to keep getting better. So why not, you know, try and give them some help while you're at it? Why wait? The future is now.
I agree. And, you know, I think the Wizards, especially because the Cavs are here now, are probably right to find the middle ground between going for it and not giving up your future, because the future might be the only thing that matters, because we might just see Cavs Warriors every finals for the next like 3 years, right? Devin Harris was Ernie Gunfeld it was his first pick, his first number one pick. I like that pick. Yeah, I think Devin Harris is really, really good. Or he was. And then he whiffed on some Ukrainian named Oleksiy Pechorov.
Of course.
Yeah. And then I like Nick Young at 18. I think that's good. I also like JaVale McGee at 18 the year after. And then after that, with the 30th pick, he got Lazar Hayward.
Yeah.
I don't even remember who that is. So,
oh gosh.
I guess he missed on Lazar, right?
Yeah. But I think, you know, while you know, skill set wise slash theoretically, JaVale McGee and Nick Young are good players. I think the fact that they
do you blame that pick on Ernie though? Because I think that it was a good pick that didn't work out. And you got an A. You got a starter for like multiple years from JaVale.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Nene was huge on both of those playoff teams.
And that's the 18th pick, by the way. So,
yeah. I don't know. I just feel like the way, you know, those two and Andre Blatch flamed out was just such a...
Andre Blatch was a second-round pick, though.
Yeah, the way it all went down, like, with how... like, they all just turned out to be, like, huge idiots. Like, I guess that... I mean, I guess you can like not pick up on that when you're just like interviewing these guys and whatnot. But like for all three of them to be just spectacular morons and that's part of Ernie Grunfeld's job to be like, OK, these guys play basketball well. And are they idiots? Like, and sometimes, you know what? And if sometimes, you know, you can be an idiot and be really good at basketball. Like that's
okay. Waiters.
Right. But like. It just was so crazy. I just can't. I mean, I don't think any Wizards fan will ever get over that or get past or give him a pass on that. Or I guess, you know, on paper, yeah, sure, they were good draft picks, but your team gelling and like listening to a coach, like those have to be things that you cover your bases on too when you're drafting. So, you know,
I mean, like. Getting Nick Young as the 16th pick, like I think that he's so talented that, I mean, at the 16th pick, you either have to compromise and get a sort of talented and sort of not an idiot guy, right? Or you can get a smart guy. You can go for Malcolm Brogdon, right? And get a smart guy who maybe doesn't have much upside. I think they have huge upside, JaVale and Nick Young. There's like an alternate universe somewhere. Assuming that the universe is solipsistic and Nick Young isn't actually a real human. He's just a figment of our own individual reality or my own individual reality. There's a world out there where Nick Young and JaVale are like all-stars, like multi-year all-stars. So
yeah,
I
can dig it.
And same with Andre Blatch.
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, Earth 2 over there where, though, I mean, you know, Nick Young is just a sniper and JaVale McGee just dunks on people and Andre Blatch is just, he's just a large man and no one can handle him, you know, in the post or, you know, he hits jumpers and the Wizards are awesome. And yeah, but no, that doesn't exist.
Okay. So John Wall, is the next number one pick. And then, Jan Vesely, that's a really bad pick. I think that's the reason he has the reputation because so John Wall, Bradley Beal, Otto Porter, and then Jerian Grant was last year with the 19th pick, like a reasonable pick for number 19. But Jan Vesely with number 6 what was the 2011 draft like? But anyways, talk about Jan.
Well, the problem, the thing about the Jan pick is it was, I mean, it should have. Like, he should be another guy on this team right now and, like, who should be, like, totally developed and, you know, like, a good player at this point. And the fact that they had to go plugging that hole, you know, has kind of, you know, hurt them long term. I mean, especially, like, last year, you know, with Brad Hurt, like, they should have had, you know, and Otto still developing, they should have had another guy, you know, in the cabinet, like, ready to go to play along John Wall. And you know what? I don't know anything about scouting Euros or whatnot, but like Jan Vesely's mixtape looked cool. And like, everyone was like, yeah, he'll catch lobs from John Wall and it'll be fun. And, then he like airballed free throws. And you know what? Honestly, I really do wonder how, if, you know, he could have turned into an NBA player if he had a different coach and not Randy Whitman, who just would berate him and be mean to him. And I just, you know, if he had a guy who was really known
for the Dario Saric dilemma, you know?
Right. I mean,
what could have been?
Yeah, I completely.
JanVesely.com.blogspot.com.
He plays in Europe, and he's not. He's pretty good in whatever league that he's in. Like I think I follow him on Facebook, and you know he's always getting hyped up in their like team graphics and stuff. So it's not like he's. I mean, maybe he's terrible in the NBA sense, but I mean, I just think his confidence was couldn't have been more shattered. After a very short amount of time, and you know, that's takes a huge toll on a young player. So it's not surprising, and it sucks that he didn't work out, or they didn't draft someone who did work out, because otherwise, this team, you know, they're really good right now, but they could be great.
It looks like he's okay playing for Turkish team Fenerbahce.
Yep, he's like happy over there, which I'm happy for him.
Yeah. I guess that's the reason for the reputation there.
Yeah, for sure.
But Jordan Clarkson with the number.
I can't tell you.
He's been really bad this year though. So
yeah,
and I mean he's validating his draft position this year. It's like, oh yeah, this guy is not athletic and will take difficult shots that unless he becomes a mechanic, to continue with the machine theme, he won't hit, you know?
Yeah. The fact the Wizards literally gave him away for nothing. So, you know, no matter how bad he is this year, I mean, he could have certainly helped them make the playoffs last year. I mean, he would have, you know, he would have started for the Wizards for stretches last year. Yeah. Just the fact they gave him away for nothing. And you know, again, if he's on this team and, you know, he's on a terrible Lakers team with a bunch of young guys, that's just a tough spot to be in for anyone, but especially for a second year player. And, you know, say he's on this Wizards team and he's under Scott Brooks, who's already improved everyone on the team, especially the young guys. So, you know, maybe he benefits from that and he's not actually terrible on, you know, Earth too, when the Wizards don't give him away for free.
Yeah. Yeah. He's shooting 25% better than Marcus Thornton is, and 25% worse from three than Marcus Thornton.
So that's what you know. That's bad times.
All right. Well, we were going to talk about trades, and then we talked about Ernie Grunfeld's draft history instead. So are you looking at anyone right now? Well, I was thinking during the game, I actually had the thought when they were talking about the rumor that Carmelo is pushing for a Kevin Love trade for Melo. Did you hear that?
I hadn't heard it till the game either. I think Dave was telling me that it was Frank Isola that was reporting that.
Yeah.
I think that's crazy, especially after I watched Kevin Love bury five threes and, you know, just right, torch the Wizards. And LeBron is
a smart man. LeBron is not that dumb.
As a Wizards fan, I have a special place in LeBron in my heart for him in terms of hatred. But I generally like LeBron, and I like watching him play, really. But for him to sit and whine about not having any other playmakers when he held the Cavaliers hostage and forced them to give giant contracts to Tristan Thompson and, you know, J.R. Smith, like, dude, you got Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving on your team. Like, what are you talking about?
God, man, no. Dan Gilbert is the man who sent the Comic Sans assassination letter. Look, that's what the bottom line is, because they right now could sign just any free agent guard, right? They're trying out Jordan Farmar. They're trying out whatever. The thing is, they could just be waving Birdman, waving the next guy, and just bring in guys after guys after guys and see, okay, is this the guy? And I remember he made that statement the day before Yogi Ferrell started against them, against the Cavaliers, and then beat them with like 37 points and 9 threes or something like ridiculous like that, right? And just the other day, the Warriors signed the other guy who I thought that the Cavs by now should have picked up. I don't remember his name. He played for the Heat last year. I understand that the Cavs are spending a ton of money, but like, that's what you signed up for when the king forgived you, Dan Gilbert, you dickhead.
Oh, yeah. Dan Gilbert is definitely a dickhead. I just,
you know. Spend every cent that LeBron wants. I like, you're right that yes, he extorted them into giving tons of money to the other guys. And you know, if you sit LeBron down and have like a frank discussion about the numbers, like you can explain that to him, but he's saying bring in like a bench playmaker and you could be spending, you could be giving 1 year salaries to guys and just waiving them and trying out stuff to make it work. And like that $400 million contract, you're going to pay $4 million of taxes on that. And like as Dan Gilbert, you have to do that because LeBron, you've sullied his name.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think they're already paying a bunch in luxury tax. I mean, Dan Gilbert more. he's got enough money for that nonsense. So I'm certainly not upset for him, but like, I don't know. I think the inactivity and like just the overall, just the complaining overall, I'm just not sympathetic towards his position as the NBA champion. And, you know,
how do you feel about John Wall? I mean, John Wall whining about not having a max and taking things out on Reggie Jackson and beefing with his, I think that John Wall in a lot of ways is a mini LeBron. So, I mean, certainly on court. And, I think that, you know, he's a little bit, there's a lot of drama, but like, I mean, it's not like a big deal though.
No, it's not a big deal, but I mean, people are, I feel like he's, you know, the best, most overlooked player in the entire league. Like it's just how it's always been. Yeah, for sure. I think tonight was like huge in reminding like, hey everyone, John Wall's good. Like he's over here. Don't forget about him. You know, and I think him like complaining about the money is weird. I mean, it's he's just a victim of the circumstance. Like it, like the cap and everything just happened to jump right after he signed his. You know, it's just the way of life in the NBA. As we've all gotten used to, you know, when we see Tristan Thompson sign whatever absurd contract he signed over the summer or 2 years ago, whatever. You know. While he does complain about that stuff, what he's really good at taking it and using it as motivation. A lot of guys just complain and like don't get better. He continues to get better. And honestly, I think the biggest slight towards him has been the disrespect Mike Krzyzewski has shown him in leaving him off Team USA over and over and over again. But he uses it.
John Wall or John Wall, right?
John Wall, yeah.
Yeah, maybe so he has something to do with the college he came from. I don't know. Maybe.
Oh yeah, I mean that's absolutely what it's all about. I mean, when you have freaking Miles Plumlee on Team USA, it's all about the coach. Yeah, it's all about Mike Krzyzewski.
Oh man. Oh god. I don't like him. I don't like him at all. Anyways, right before we wrap up, because we're at just about an hour, I'm really glad I had a podcast where I didn't talk that much about trade deadline stuff, but I mean, I feel like it's something I should do. Like, do you have any thoughts? Like, what have been like the preliminary ideas that you've had running forward? You might have talked about them already on your show too much, but maybe any new ideas that you've been thinking about? I think Carmelo is a always good version of Markieff Morris, personally. So I think, you know.
Yeah, I just think they'd have to give, although, you know, if they gave up Markieff on a good contract, first rounder, they'd probably have to give up like Oubre too.
Yeah.
I might be into that.
I'm into that. I think that, you know, Otto Porter, right? You have him cover the better of the two guys, whether it's a power forward or a small forward. And then Gortat is sort of like a good, maybe a little bit better than good catch all defensive center. I think that Melo fits better on the Wizards than almost any other team in the league, honestly.
Yeah, I think that'd be an interesting, yeah. Keith, first rounder.
How far is DC from New York?
About 3.5-4 hours. So he could still hang out in his penthouse and look out into the world while he does his big business dealings, whatever those may be.
Ninja Turtles. Yeah.
Other than that, I mean, I haven't really thought a whole lot about trade scenarios, mostly because I think in the front of my mind, I'm with the rest of the Wizards fans that are like, do not, whatever you do, not trade that pick. Don't do it. Don't do it, Ernie, but I think it probably will happen. Honestly, without trading the pick, my really dumb thought on as far as a backup guard goes, and this is just total my University of Maryland alumnus bias coming out, but Gravis Vasquez coming back from an injury, I think he would be a good guard off the bench. And I heard that they worked out the guys have been, people have been working out Larry Sanders. I'd be interested to see how he's doing and, you know, hopefully keeping it together mentally. I don't know. I don't know what state he's in. I know he worked out for the Celtics. I know he was going to work out for the Wiz this week, I think. Other than that, I don't know. I've heard some Elfrid Payton talk that the Magic might be trying to get rid of him. I mean,
well, Serge Ibaka is someone I was going to bring up.
Yeah, I could be down for Serge, but I think
the thing is, the reason why I think that the reason I think he hasn't been traded is because the Orlando Magic, I think at this point they know that they need to move him and like recoup some assets, but I think they're not very smart. And they haven't realized that since Serge can just leave in free agency next year, it just like tanks his value, right? Because he's not even going to have the option to like, he's completely unrestricted and he could just totally leave anywhere. So I think that, you know, getting Ibaka from a desperate Magic is something that could happen like in the 5 minutes before the trade deadline is up.
Yeah. So is he a free agent this summer or next summer?
Next summer.
Or next summer.
He's a free agent as soon as he can be a free agent. So at the end of this year, he's an unrestricted free agent.
Oh, okay. At the end of this year. Yeah. I don't know if the Wizard, I feel like whatever they do, they'd have to get a guy already on a contract, because I think for them to give things up just for like a, you know, a 6 month mercenary would be bad for them right now. I mean, they just don't, I think they could put their eggs into a small basket, but a half of year basket is way too small for them. You know, I couldn't see them.
Well,
doing
I'm
that.
Saying like, I don't think that the reason I said that his value is going to be really low, because I'm talking about something like, something around Oubre, who's that, Nicholson, and your first rounder next year.
Maybe. I don't
like that's like the 23rd pick in the draft. Like, that's like nothing. And Ibaka last year, like the Thunder almost beat the man, I think Serge is still good. That's the thing.
I agree. I think he's still good too.
People were saying the same things, like, oh, well, yeah, he's hitting his shots, but he's not that good at defense. And then, like, they pushed the best team ever to 7 games, and a lot of it was because of Serge Ibaka being, like, mobile and hitting shots. So,
yeah,
I think in the playoffs, he's still going to be Serge.
He's on the dumb Magic, too. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, and he could be that guy that does cover LeBron and, you know, covers Kevin Love as well. It's certainly something we're thinking. I just don't really see them. I think they're going to have a really tough time parting with Oubre. It would have to be for like a top tier player to do that. And, maybe the first rounder.
I think the best thing the Magic can do at this point to save face is get a first round pick, which because Serge can leave, it's not going to be a first round pick. They can get a guy, like, Who did the Thunder select? The son of that NBA player. What's his name?
The Sabonis? Power,
yeah, Sabonis, right. So they have to get a first-round pick back. Of course, it's not going to be anywhere near like the sixth pick in the draft or whatever it was. And they need to get a young prospect back so that you can say, okay, we gave up Oladipo, young prospect, for another young prospect, and we gave up our first-round pick for another first-round pick. And in the end, everything worked out, even though it didn't, right? I mean, even maybe Satoransky in a first round pick does it. And then like to make the salary work, you can dump some crappy player.
Yeah. If we're talking Satoransky in a first, I'd probably
Trey Burke. Like, I mean,
If they really wanted to do, I mean, they do Satoransky and then Trey Burke and Marcus Thornton. Both are on expirings. I might be interested if I'm Ernie Grunfeld. I'm listening for sure. And then you could put Markieff Morris on the bench, and you know, he's your bench power forward and your scoring threat there. And yeah, I mean that.
But you haven't thought about anything else though.
No, not really. I think I'm just kind of in the box of let's do everything we don't have to hang. Let's hang on to this pick, like, just out of principle. I think at this point, because Ernie's been so easy to flip them and get rid of them, I think it's just kind of like a general like annoyance, and it's like, hey, like let's try and do something. Let's try and actually build. But again, now we're circling back around. Maybe Ernie's not the worst GM, and maybe, you know, he actually did build something, and I should just shut up and be grateful instead of complain about it. I did heckle him though about the bench at
I heard you say that.
Yep.
Ernie, what about that bench?
wasn't mean. He didn't look up, but I'm sure he gets a lot. But yeah, I just wanted to know. His minion looked up. I wish he would have answered, but no inside knowledge here.
Yeah, that was a funny story. You know, if you don't have any trade ideas, I didn't have time to make an outline, so I mean, that Ibaka and Melo thing, that's the best I got, man. So I guess this podcast is over, right?
Yeah, it's getting kind of late over here. I'm riding on these fumes from this crazy game that we just witnessed. Yeah, I mean, I honestly haven't really thought about it. I've been too busy watching Wizards wins to think about, you know, shaking things up at this point.
Well, no, that's actually exciting for me. I'm happy that I recorded a podcast, you know, an episode of Almighty Ball and NBA Show, but also of Zardcast, and didn't talk the whole time about trades, because that's something that's been happening a lot recently. And now, listeners, you know that. You also know that the reason why I haven't had like a pure Almighty Ball and episode for a while is because I had a really bad flu, so I was crazy sick for a while, so I wasn't on any episodes, and but now I'm back and beautiful and better than ever, and I'm back with CT, one of the hosts of one of the best A-Team podcasts that we have available, Zardcast, and I appreciate you coming on, even though you're right, it is later over there in Chocolate City than it is here where I'm at in my undisclosed location in the Siberia wilderness.
Siberia of America. You know what? If I could tell the listeners where you actually live, that's how I would describe it to someone.
Yeah. Really?
No, not really.
I think Austin's a nice city. It's good.
I'm glad to... thank you for having me on, first of all, but I'm glad that you're feeling better, and I'm glad, or hopefully, that your unguarded shooting host Lux is feeling better as well. He got
into a car accident and had a concussion.
Yeah, he was supposed to talk Young Pope with us, and he was like, I'm concussed, I shouldn't be podcasting. And I was like, you are right, feel better, sir. So glad. Yeah. the Almighty Baller team is, you know, on the up and up.
We went through some dark periods like the Wizards, and we're coming out triumphant like the Wizards. So, you know, it's very exciting stuff. Thank you for listening, everyone. Follow me at Almighty Ballin on Twitter. Follow the network at ABPN Podcast. It's a new account, so you might look at the followers and be like, why would I follow this chump network? But it's been around for like a couple of weeks. Give it some time and follow it. You aren't a chump if you do that. And also follow, it's what, at CT Schwink, right?
Yes, CTSCHWINK. At Zardcast. At
Zardcast.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
right on.
Yeah, do all four of those things. Or follow all four of those accounts. And also thank you for listening. And thanks for coming on. And good night, everyone out there.
Woo! Good stuff.